stretched me off the course. When I got back to the road, someone had a pair of scissors and they snipped my wrist bracelet, and they said, that's the end of your Western States. And then the water work started. But it was one hell of an experience, that's for sure. It's what ultra running's all about.
Kia ora, that was Paul Chartres. I'm Matt Raymond.
I'm Eugene Bingham.
And welcome to Dirt Church Radio, interesting conversations with interesting runners. I think the best thing about Ultra Shoes, proud sponsors of Dirt Church Radio, is how Golden Harper and Brian Beckstead, the founders of Ultra, used all that alien technology they found in Area 51 to inject the mid and outer soles of their shoes with hundreds and thousands of disembodied alien spirits from a race of marauding intergalactic Vikings that crash-landed in the Nevada desert in 1951 and subsequently perished from our planet's worryingly low atmospheric sodium levels. When you're hooting and hollering down your favourite trail in your Ultra shoes, digging that zero-drop platform which promotes a softer footfall and natural landing, and your toes are just squealing with joy at being free to move and splay inside that foot-shaped toe box, and you're really, really digging that fantastic midsole response, just be mindful that what you're really experiencing is hundreds and thousands of celestial beings pushing back against you in agony. Formless, disembodied. But nonetheless, we love Ultra, as they make really great shoes, and we're pleased as punch that they're sponsoring Dirt Church Radio.
Dirt Church Radio!
Okay, welcome to our first episode.
Number one.
That's us. Yep. We're a podcast about trail running from Aotearoa, New Zealand. So who have we got this week, Eugene?
We've got the big dog. We've got Mr. Tarawera.
El Pape Suave.
That's him. Is he known by that?
I call him that.
Well, maybe just you.
No, everyone's going to call him that now. But yeah, Paul Chartres, the race director of Tarawera Ultra Marathon, has been kind enough to be the guest on our first ever episode of Dirt Church Radio.
And we are so excited to be bringing him to the show. We've got that coming up later, but first of all, stuff you should know. Yeah, you said that very enthusiastically.
I love it.
So that's our segment where we want to tell you things that are going on. Over the weekend was Wutu K in Wellington. Now that's an urban race.
Yeah, so the Wutu K stands for Wellington Urban Ultra, and 2,000 metres ostensibly, but it's not. It's much more that at elevation, so the Wutu K, and this is in its third year. And it is a grassroots, independent ultra marathon and trail marathon run around, sort of circumnavigating the Wellington CBD. It starts in Kandala at the base of Mount Kaukau and goes up over the Skyline Trail, up over Makara Peak, down through all the mountain bike trails through there.
So it's all those wonderful hills that when you're in the middle of Wellington, you look up, you see all those green hills around you with those trails that just
up over the wind turbine, and it is a beast. I was lucky enough to run the first year that it was on in 2016. I did the marathon and it knocked me around. It is a brutal race. And
so this year there was a prize up, or some you could get a free entry if you beat Sam McCutcheon's record.
Yeah.
Now, that was probably never going to happen, was it?
Look, he's a beast. Yeah. He really is. I was down in Wellington the last year, a couple of days after the Wutu K, and he'd set that 5:16 record for the 62K. And I was going to meet up with the Wellington running meetup. They have this Tuesday night run called the Tuesday Night Spectacular. Or is it a Thursday Night Spectacular?
It's either spectacular.
A Tuesday or a Thursday Night Spectacular. You meet down the waterfront, and there was Sam McCutcheon and his wife, Sarah. They came past on their way to speed training, you know, on their way to go to intervals with all the fast dudes. So
Yeah.
I think he might be a robot. I'm not sure.
He's certainly fast.
He is very fast.
Yeah. So his record of 5:16 didn't go this weekend, did it?
No, it didn't. But Andreas Romanius certainly came across in a blistering time of
5:47, and that is the second fastest time that that has been done.
He's a pretty remarkable athlete in his own right. And Alison Wilson won the women's in 7 hours and 13 minutes.
With Emma Bassett coming in at 7:23:22. Now, she's one of the nicer people that you'll ever meet, and one of the more capable runners as well.
So that's, yeah, so she was second. In the marathon, now that was, so that was the race that you did, so that's a marathon distance over these trails.
Oh, it's more. It's like 43, 44 kilometres.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They lied.
Gareth's a bad man. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And Will Bell won that in 3:52 this year for the men.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah. And Danny Nicholson. Yeah. One in 4:13 for the women.
And Mel Aitken coming in second at 4:26:53. And both of those women demolished the course record.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So that's stuff you should know, Wu2K. Now, our other weekly feature of the show is Greatest Run Ever, which is where we want you to write in and tell us what your greatest run ever is. It doesn't have to be a race. It doesn't have to be you climbed an amazing mountain. It could just be a run around the block.
Yeah.
It could be something, just a magic moment that you ran. Now, we put out a call in our trailer episode, which was great that many people listened to, and we had a couple of people straight out of the gate.
Yeah, we did. They were very keen.
Yeah. So the first one was Peter Frew, who wrote to us and said, mine was my Boston Marathon. I started running as an overweight person to lose weight over the years, and I met up with a group of runners and joined a local club. Everyone talked about Boston, so I made it my goal, not just to get a time, but to get to the race, which he did. And that's a great achievement there, Peter. And it's a common story you hear, don't you, of people starting running with health goals in mind, and then finding that there's a lot more to running than just that.
That's right. And I think, you know, segueing nicely into our next person who's going to talk about this is someone who is, again, he's quite well known in New Zealand running circles as a coach and an athlete.
Can we call him a friend of the show?
I think he's a friend of the show. He's a close acquaintance of the show. No, he's a friend of the show. Yeah. James Kugler wrote in.
So he did. He identified 2008 Cape Breton Challenge in 2008. That's why it was the 2008 version. And he says it's an event that's fallen by the wayside. So he was on a holiday to the Bay of Islands with his new chiropractic college flatmates, and he was a young wannabe runner, fresh off his first coast-to-coast. The course was shortened by 2 to 3 kilometres due to weather at the Cape Breton Lighthouse. When I got to the junction, there was no sign of a marshal or any markings telling me which way to go. So I turned around, assuming I was lost, ran back for 6 minutes until I found the next runner. He confirmed that I was going the right way and that I needed to turn right at the junction. People talk about the Cape Breton track being hilly, though I accessed a surreal state of consciousness for most, if not all, of the race. I have zero memory of any hills. Cross the line in 4 hours, the fastest time recorded on the course, albeit with a shortened course, though lengthened by a missing marker. I've run that track a couple of times, and I did not reach that zen-like state of not remembering hills, because that's the only thing I can remember about that track.
It doesn't sound like it was zen-like. It sounded like James was tripping balls. That's what it sounds like to me.
He'd lost his mind.
He's lost his mind. That's right.
Well, he's running backwards.
His ego has dissolved. That's right.
He's getting lost. He's not even realizing there's hills in front of him. But, that's his greatest run ever. So those are a couple of examples. They're really, really good examples. And thanks for writing into us, guys, and letting us know those. But if you have a memory you want to share with us, an event, something that really just sticks in the mind, flick us an email, dirtchurchradio@gmail.com, or we're on the social medias. We're on
Twitter. At Dirt Church Radio.
At Dirt Church Radio. Also, tell us who you'd like to see on the show.
Yeah, we'd really be keen. We have a fair idea of who we'd like to get on the show, but we'd really like to hear from you. And you can email us, you can reach out to us on social media. Who would you like to see us interview? It doesn't mean we're going to do it, but we'd be really keen to hear from you anyway. And,
this could be a very slippery downhill slide if we committed to interviewing the
people. We will interview everyone that you tell us to interview.
Yeah, that's going to be... we're setting ourselves up.
We won't do that.
We won't do that. No, no.
Okay. All right. So let's get through.
It's time to get to our first guest, isn't it? Paul Charteris, who's race director of Tarawera Ultra Marathon. And this year, or just very recently, Paul and his business partner, Dr. Tim Day, have introduced some changes. So we're going to talk to him about some of those.
Yep, changes to the format and structure of the races. And it's also, you know, it's an exciting time for Paul himself because him and his partner in life, Sarah, are about to become parents for the first time. So he's had this Tarawera baby, this race that he's grown, and now they'll be having an actual human baby. So that's an amazing change and a growth, and we're really excited to talk about that.
So let's get on with our first conversation. I love how we call it conversation rather than interview, isn't it?
Yeah, it is a conversation.
Interesting conversations with interesting runners, not interesting interviews with interesting runners. So let's get on with that, Mr. Paul Charteris. Dirtchurch Radio.
Okay, kia ora everyone. We're here on our first episode of Dirtchurch Radio with someone who, for many people, is their first introduction to trail racing, or they're certainly the first introduction into the ultra marathon scene. He's just celebrated 10 years of a very successful race. His name is Paul Charteris. He is the race director of the Tarawera Ultra Marathon, and he's here talking with us. Welcome, Paul.
Good morning, Matt. Good morning, Eugene. Lovely to be here with you today.
We wanted to talk to you, Paul, about, I guess you've just, as I said in the lead-in, you've just celebrated 10 years of Tarawera, and you've come from a place of, you know, the race and has undertaken such tremendous change in that 10 years. And you've just announced, after your 10th running, a series of quite sweeping changes. I wonder if you'd talk us through those and, you know, let us and the people know what's been happening and what is going to happen for the 2019 Tarawera Ultra Marathon.
Sure, yep. So the past 3 months since the Tarawera Ultra Marathon, it's been more than 3 months now, but we've been working on this, the Tarawera Ultra issues for that length of time. So it extends right back to last year's marathon and 50K. When we opened entries last year, the numbers for our shorter distance event, the Tiki Tapu Trail Run, more than tripled, which was absolutely awesome. But the numbers for the marathon and the 50K itself declined a little bit, which was unexpected since we'd had 3 years of very, very solid growth up to then. The thing about that event is it's quite operationally, it's rather difficult, and it's also very costly with the boats to put that event on. So the event paid for itself. It definitely broke even, but it didn't make a whole lot of money to keep the rest of the business afloat for the other 11 and a half months of the year, basically.
Just jumping in, Paul, I think that's what lots of people don't appreciate is that, you know, you do have to keep this afloat. It is a business. You've got to, it's not, these things don't happen for free.
Yeah, exactly. And an event doesn't just have to make a profit for the event itself. It has to make a profit for the whole business. With everything else associated with the business, with staff costs full-time and equipment and storage sheds and things like insurance and taxation and legal fees and you know, everything that normal business in New Zealand has to go through. And so the event, you know, is, if you had it just standalone, it would have done quite nicely. But if it had the job of helping support a whole business behind it, it didn't do as well as it should have.
Yeah, so you had to make that call.
So we had to make that call, and we had to make a decision there. Then we had the Tarawera Ultra in February and introduced the 100 miler. And in many ways, last year was a big step towards what the 2019 event is going to be, with the reversal of the course and the introduction of the 100 miler.
Just by the reversal of the course, you mean going from Kawerau to Rotorua, which was the reverse of what it traditionally had been.
Which is the reverse of what it has been for the previous 9 years. And so just the rationale behind reversing that course is we were always going to put on the 100 miler. And the most logical route for the 100 mile was one gigantic big loop around nine lakes in the Rotorua district, which is what it was. And it takes in the best of all of the locations in this area. And the way to make that, the only way to make that feasible is a start and finish line in Rotorua, which is logical. Then we umdenard for quite a while over, do we keep the traditional 6287 102k ultras finishing in Kawarau? And in reality, having two finish lines is just incredibly difficult on our operational team and our timing team, but it also splits all the attention and all the atmosphere for the event, because you'll have some people celebrating finishes in Rotorua and some would have been in Kawarau. You just wouldn't have had the same type of atmosphere and the same type of event. So hence the reason to reverse those courses and have everyone finish together.
And how did people respond to that this year? I mean, it seemed to go down well, notwithstanding the weather, but having that one finish line, how did you find that?
It was really, really good. It went extremely well. If the weather had been a little bit better, and for those that weren't there, our 100 miler started at 4 o'clock on Saturday morning, and our final 100 mile runner finished at 4 p.m. on Sunday. For that 36 hours, it rained for 36 hours. Well, it wasn't continuous rain; it was a fair bit of drizzling cloud. But the atmosphere would have certainly been way, way better if it was one of our typical nice sunny February days. But having everyone coming in together certainly helped. And I think if we have one of our true blinders of a summer day, that would be just the most magic finish line in the whole world. Down at Government Gardens there. It's a really nice location. It's also, I acknowledge, it's a little bit tougher course for many. It's a net uphill from the Kawarau end to Rotorua. But at the same time, it's also probably more convenient for the runners, because all we need to do is just simply bus them to the start line and they run home, and friends and family can pick them up and take them to dinner. And if they're from out of town, and the vast majority of our runners are from out of Rotorua, they can just go back to a hotel room in Rotorua, and it's just quite easy and convenient that way. So,
in 2018, you also had those shorter distance events, but you've recently announced some changes around those. Just can you talk us through those and the rationale?
Yes. Yep. So we've got a number of shorter distance events. So we've had the Tiki Tapu Trail Run, which has been part of the Tarawera Trail Marathon in 50 in November. So we're hoping to incorporate some of the best elements of that Tiki Tapu Trail Run into the ultra marathon, and it's still a little bit of a work in progress. Do we do a separate Tiki Tapu Trail Run at some time of the year, or do we incorporate some of the great elements of that event into February's ultra marathon? In the ultra marathon race weekend itself this year, the shorter distances were really the relay options, and so they have been removed for 2019. And in 2019, we'll add a 20-kilometer run on the Friday of race week. So the rationale there being, there will be a lot of runners and walkers who would like to crew or pace their 100K runner, not pacing for the 100K, we won't allow paces in that, but crewing for the 100K runner, or they're pacing and crewing their 100-mile runner on the Saturday and Sunday. And this gives them an event of their own that they can participate in and race and enjoy, and become part of the finish line celebrations for that. And then have a good night's sleep on Friday, and then go out on Saturday and Sunday and be part of the action for those longer events.
Fantastic. It's really interesting you said you're going to incorporate elements of the Tiki Tapu Trail Run into the ultra marathon. I, for one, am... That sounds amazing, and that will ramp up the technicality, I guess, of at least certain parts of the course, won't it? And the degree of challenge and the degree of difficulty for the runners. I know that which is a good thing,
But I think with, you know, with the weather being what it was, did you get much feedback about that? I mean, obviously it's out of your control, but were people, I think, a bit shocked and caught out by the nature of just how wet it was?
Yeah, there probably were. It was very, very muddy on the eastern and western Okataina walkways. I have to admit, and that slowed down people.
Can we stop talking about this? Because I'm having flashbacks and I'm about to cry. I did the 100K. Well, when I say I did the 100K, I didn't even finish because that was that mud on that eastern Okataina, western Okataina, was it? Going up that hill,
western,
was just insane. And, yeah, there were tears, there was swearing. And I think, yeah, Matt's just trying to bring flashbacks to me.
Yep. And that's part of the reason why we've changed the race format as well. So if we'd kept the same race format, there would have been 62 and 87K runners going on that trail before the 102Ks and the 100 milers. So the plan is to put the 50-kilometre event on the southern side of Lake Tarawera, and it takes them away from those Okataina tracks altogether.
Fantastic. Wonderful.
So the only runners that will hit those tracks will be the 102K and the milers. Now, having said that, if it's a pretty much a normal dry year, there is almost no mud on those tracks at all. It's very, very dry and generally quite free draining. So it's a little bit of a toss-up of what the weather will be. The weather these days in February is becoming very inclement, so it's just impossible to predict anymore.
Unpredictability has just been one of the themes of this race since you started, really, hasn't it? I mean, you've had everything thrown at you, from the fire course year to the cyclone year. It's just, it's an outdoor event, so you can't deal with these things.
Yep, and let's not forget the flood year as well. We had one year
that's
the lakes
right.
were flooded, and people had to run through knee-deep water in both Blue Lake and Lake Okataina. And that year the floods actually contributed to change the leadership of the men's race in the 100K. So Varjan Armstrong and the Mick Donjes were leading that race together, and they'd both gone through the lake, which was flooded, and they'd got bits of little pumice stones stuck in their shoes. So when they got to the next aid station, they both sat down and they had a gentleman's agreement that they would change their shoes and get the pumice out, and they would run together because they ran in together. So one of the runners sat down in front of the aid station, one sat down behind the aid station, and they had this agreement and tipped the pumice stones and the water out of their shoes. Then I think Mick looked over at Varjan at the exact time that Varjan was bending down tying up his shoelaces and didn't see him and thought that Varjan had ran ahead, then promptly got up and started chasing what he thought was Varjan. And then Varjan looked up once he'd tied up his shoelaces and saw that Mick was gone and went chasing him. So that's where the leadership of the race changed. And it was because these guys trying to get pumice.
It's high drama.
It is. You never know what causes.
And did they work it out? Sort of, were they annoyed at each other? Like, I know if Eugene and I were racing and I looked down and had a gentleman's agreement and I thought Eugene had violated that treaty, I would be pretty annoyed. Did they work it out?
No. I think it was very amicable at the.
I wouldn't be so amicable, Matt. I'd, no, you know. But then you're not. Varjan Armstrong's a pretty amicable guy, isn't he?
He is. Yeah. There's no one nicer, really, is there?
No.
Hey Paul, so you've basically set up this race on in the backyard that you grew up in, really. Did you understand that you had family land that ran alongside the Tarawera River?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I grew up as a wee little boy in Kawarau, running around in bare feet on the banks of the Tarawera River. Our farm was downstream of Kawarau, so we had a sheep and beef farm there. So I was, when I was a wee lad, I was running all around the hills above the river, and our dogs would jump in the river, and occasionally our bulls would jump in the river as well and swim across to the other side, and we'd have to go and rescue them periodically. But my whole lot, life and childhood has grown up in the Kawarau area and alongside that river. And a lot of my earliest childhood memories are going in the family ute, the Mazda ute at the time, and we'd all pile in there and go into the Tarawera forest and collect firewood and or have a picnic and do all of these sorts of things. And you know, I was you know, 6, 7, 8 years old at the time, so I can't remember where we were, but I'm sure that a lot of those adventures from my childhood are those same trails and areas where the runners do run these days.
So it's right in your blood.
It is very much so.
For those who aren't familiar, I mean, Kawerau is sort of a town dominated by the mill. There's the incredible landscape around it, but it's really thought of as a mill town, isn't it? Were you sort of part of that, of the town, or living on the edge? Were you away from that?
We're on a farm a little bit away from the centre of town, but Kawerau was our closest township. And my dad worked in the mill as well, like pretty much everyone did. Although if you ask my mum, she would say he hardly ever worked at the mill. He went there to drink his cup of tea and read the newspaper, according to her. But Kawerau in the 1970s was the richest town in New Zealand, GDP per capita. Kawerau had its own airport. It had a thriving shopping centre. And incomes in that town were phenomenally high. New Zealand's two richest people both lived in Kawerau. Oh. Hugh Fletcher lived there. And also the owner of the tissue paper mill, which was known as Caxton at the time, lived there as well. So it was a town where a lot of people who were very hardworking, industrious, gravitated to. A lot of engineers moved to that town, especially from Finland, and my mother's Finnish, so that's the reason that she came to Kawerau. And met my dad there, who was working on construction at the time. And so sort of the rest is history. But over the decade from the start of the 80s onwards, the automation and also the declining demand for newsprint, especially newspapers worldwide, has meant that the three paper machines that they had there were sequentially shuttered. So number one machine closed down, then number two, and there's only one paper machine going. So a mill that had a workforce of around 2,500 people in the 1970s is now down to about 400 people.
Wow, so it's just a shadow of itself. And you see that when you go to the, you know, when the crowds arrive for your race now, you can see that the town is very much different to the Kawerau of 1970 that you describe. So you went to the local school, Edgecombe College, but you were obviously incredibly bright. I mean, you ended up pursuing a career in science.
I did indeed, and that was partly because of growing up on the farm with a whole lot of sheep and cattle around, and so I was very, very much interested in animal genetics. So I, when I left Edgecombe College, I went to Massey University and started a career in animal genetics, specifically bull genetics and beef cattle genetics. So I always wanted to be a bull expert. So I did my bachelor's and master's degree in animal science at Massey University and worked there for a while, and then went to Colorado State University and worked on my PhD over there in the Colorado Rockies.
I love how you just sort of dropped that in there. Right? Yeah. You know, I was doing this and then I went to Colorado State University. You know, like, that must have been phenomenal. You know, how did that come about?
The Colorado opportunity is because I was studying and worked in Palmerston North for many years, and there were there's only so many universities around the world who specialize in beef cattle genetics, and Colorado State was one of them. I was about 26 at the time, and it was time to spread my wings and see a little bit of the world. And having lived in Palmerston North for the previous 7 or 8 years, it was time to live somewhere that did not have as high a rainfall. So the appeal of Colorado is that it had 300 rain-free days a year, plus the Rocky Mountains were right on my back doorstep. So that was a pretty logical choice.
That's pretty appealing.
Yeah. I think it's moving from Kawerau to Palmerston North, that must have been like Constantinople, and then going to Colorado. That must have been, it seemed like moving to Mars. Is that where you fell in love with trail running?
No, it actually wasn't. No. There were, you know, that was in 1997-98 that I moved to Colorado, and trail running was actually even not even a thing that much back then. So I admit I wasn't even exposed to it at all as a sport when I lived in Colorado. I think I only read little snippets on the internet about the sport at the time. Despite Colorado State being a great proving ground for a number of really good trail runners. So Dylan Bowman is a CSU graduate. Dakota Jones went to Colorado State as well, as did my partner Sarah. She went to CSU as well. So it's a great place for trail running. But it was only after I moved back to New Zealand and subsequently I got a job in California, and it was in California that I really discovered trail running and fell in love with the scene over there.
Mm. That was through the guys who live and run and train on the Western States course, hey?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, and my very first introduction to that was not even through a trail runner. I was really into triathlon at the time. And the first time I heard about Western States runners, it was I got a ride with a friend of mine, Diana, up to Auburn, and we were going to go and run some trails there as training for triathlon. We were pulled into this dirt lot car park at the trailhead in Auburn, which is right at the very, very end of the Western States Trail. Where we pulled in is about a kilometre from the finish line of Western States. So we're using those same trails, and a couple of grizzled old runners came running into the car park without any shirts on and big shaggy beards. And Diana said, "Wow, I bet those are Western States runners." And she said, those guys are really insane. They're hardcore." And the thing about Diana is that at the time she was an age group world champion at Ironman Kona. Wow. She was the reigning champion. And I thought, what the hell? Here's someone who's actually the best in the world in her age group, and she's calling these shirtless, shaggy, bearded guys really hardcore. And just keep that in the back of mind. What is a Western States runner? It was the winter after that I decided I'm going to work a little bit on my running for triathlons, and I went up to Auburn every single weekend and just walked the trails every Saturday morning. I got up to walking a marathon distance every Saturday on the trails, and all of these runners were running around all over the place, young and old, and they were running uphills that I was just struggling to walk up, and that's how my first introduction to the scene. And eventually I stopped walking and started running.
So there'd be lots of people listening who are familiar with Western States, but there'd be some who are not. So I just wonder if, as somebody who lived and breathed in that time and in that community, can you just describe to us what it is, what the magic is of Western States?
Yeah, sure. So Western States is a 100-mile run in California. It starts at near Lake Tahoe, which is in the Sierra Nevada mountains, and it finishes in Auburn, which is right in the very foothills of those mountains on the western side of the Sierra Nevada. So essentially you're running from the top of this mountain range towards the coast, towards San Francisco, finishing in Auburn before it gets truly flat. There's quite a legend around the race. Started in 1974 when Gordy Ainslie, who was a keen horse endurance rider, entered the Tevis Cup. So the Tevis Cup is a 100-mile horse race on the Western States Trail. Gordy turned up to the veterinary inspection the day before race day, and they pronounced his horse lame. And they said, "Gordy, you can't ride this horse." Gordy said, "Can I run the race myself?" And they said, "No, Gordy, it's only for animals." And then someone in the background said, "Well, Gordy is an animal." So they let Gordy run with the horses, and he finished in just under 24 hours, 23 hours and 42 minutes, and actually managed to beat a few horses along the way. The inspiration of Gordy's legendary initial run spurred others to also attempt the Tevis Trail as well, and it's become the Western States endurance run ever since.
And I understand, and this segues into something that I wanted to ask you. I understand Gordy's still running and ran this year, but he had a bit of a trial to qualify, wasn't he? He was down to his last sort of race before qualifying. I understand he gets a dispensation every year, but he still has to qualify. I know that, I've heard that with the second year of the 100-mile event, you are toughening up the qualifying for that. Can you go into that?
We haven't exactly decided what the new qualifying standard for the 100-mile will be yet for Tarawera. So we had quite an easy qualifying standard. I think it was a 50K or above for the 2018 event, but we'll make it probably just a little bit longer to qualify for the 2019 event. So, but still undecided as to exactly what that qualifying standard is going to be.
Because I guess and I've spoken to you about this in the past, whenever we've talked about, you know, your wish for Tarawera, you've always kind of said like Western States and in a UTMB or Ultra Trail de Mont Blanc, for those who don't know, format. You wanted to make the race achievable but challenging. Do you think last year, and due to the rain or a multitude of factors, the distance caught some people by surprise?
I think last year it just the conditions being muddier than we expected, muddier than what anyone expected, really, and muddier than we've ever seen before. I think that caught everyone by surprise and just made it trickier than it should have been. I think in a normal year, it would be a much more achievable event. And the philosophy behind both the Tarawera Ultra and the 100 Miler is that, look, honestly, the distance itself is tough enough. We don't need to make it any harder than it should be. So we're not going out to obtusely add gigantic hills in there or very, very steep slopes or difficult terrain, because let's face it, 50 kilometres or 102 kilometres or 160 kilometres is more than enough of a challenge in its own right. So what we want is to give people that ultramarathon experience that they, with some commitment and some dedication and attention to nutrition and training and avoiding injuries and getting your life in order, you can achieve it. We're not going to make it easy on you, because we're not going to give you we're not going to shorten the distances or anything. 100 kilometers is still 100 kilometers, but we want to make it for most people an achievable first-time ultra. And for those that have done it many times, it might be their fastest ultra or their friendliest ultra or most scenic ultra. But take from it what you will.
Saying 100 kilometres is 100 kilometres, you speak from experience, because in 2015 you ran your own course. Not only did you complete it, you wrote one of the best, all-time best race reports.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, that was quite an experience being in my my own event. Yeah, I was probably the most underprepared runner in the history of trail ultra running, I think, because the entire lead up to the race weekend is also my busiest time of the whole year and most stressful time. So I turned up to the start line and I realised that Tim was about to start counting down the runners. I hadn't even been to the porta potty yet. I hadn't filled up my drink bottles. I'd forgotten to lubricate.
You hadn't even tied your shoes.
One of my shoelaces was undone. It wasn't even had my shoes tied up. So it was just simply remarkable that I even had shorts on and a shirt to run with, because I was certainly not the most prepared runner on that start line.
I mean, they weren't even your shoes, were they? They were Mike Wardian shoes indeed, weren't they?
Oh yeah, I did use Mike Wardian shoes. Yeah. Mike and I have the same shoe size, and we both wear Hoka, so that ended up working out pretty well.
Yeah, I remember being utterly horrified when I read your race report at just how underprepared you were. I had this sort of vision in my head that because it was your race, and you know, obviously Mr. Tarawera, you're swimming in free gear, you know, like rolling and body glide, that everything would be sorted. But yeah, I remember just being horrified, and then when I spoke to you about it later for Kiwi Trail Runner, and you were saying how as you were running you were kind of planning out in your head, because one of the aid stations was running low on coke, and you were trying to scheme how to like drive back into town, get coke, bring it back to the aid station, and then keep on with the race. I remember being sort of filled with just admiration, I guess is the word. Is that sort of indicative of how your race week goes? Is it just a complete cognitive overload from the Monday to the Monday after?
It really is. It hasn't settled down a whole lot, although it was possibly even worse in the first few years of Tarawera, because before Tim came on board and took over a lot of the organisational aspects of the race, in the first few years it was just me, basically, and a group of very enthusiastic and very capable volunteers. But sort of everything associated with the event was in my head. So that was, in terms of cognitive overload, that was really, really huge. Now I'm lucky I've got a much, much bigger team behind me. Sarah takes care of a lot of the runners' queries and questions, and we've got people doing social media that help us out there, and Tim with the actual race organisation itself. But, yeah, still, the thing about race organising is there's just a million little projects on the go simultaneously. They all have to be done, because if something's missing from somewhere, it can affect three or four other things downstream.
You talked about the quality of the challenges change the bigger the event gets, hey?
Yeah, they definitely do. It's in the first year of the event, well, the first few years, all I needed to do was get a couple of tables and some jelly beans and Coke and chips to a few aid stations and make sure the course is marked correctly and that sort of thing. But now the entire challenge is infinitely higher. We've got, I think, across all of our events, something like 17 social media channels. We've got partners in other races around the world. We've got tour companies associated with the race, an elite athlete program, and we have runners from anywhere from 30 to 40 countries, and there's a whole lot of different language barriers and the way that they are used to running races in their own countries, not the same as the way that we do things in New Zealand. So the range of communication that we have to do is a lot more. Also, now it's not just a Tarawera Ultra Marathon. It's now a range of events that start on Wednesday and only finish on Sunday evening as part of our get-together dinner. So there's around about nine or ten sub-events as part of race week, in addition to the actual ultramarathon race itself.
So you and Sarah have thrown an extra complication into planning for next year's event this year.
It's not a complication.
Wow, yeah, it's a delightful complication. Tarawera has been your baby, but you've got a baby on the way.
We do have a baby on the way, due in late September. So this is our first child, and who knows what this is going to bring other than a bouncing bundle of joy, but it's first time for us. So a lot of the advice that I'm getting is that life will change dramatically and there's nothing you can do to prepare for it, really. So it's it'll be very, very different. And so we're planning our year now, and what happens in February around what we can realistically deliver as well from September onwards, because life will be so much different then.
It will, you know, and I think it's all the advice that everyone gives you. I mean, I guess you take it all in, but disregard all of it, really. But yeah, your life is going to change. I mean, what am I trying to say? I've asked you this question before. Does it give you any sense of what life looks like post-Tarawera for you or in the future?
Yeah, it's a really good question. Yeah, no, it certainly does. I can see myself spending, obviously, way, way, way more time with family. And I think you used the right phrasing earlier there, is that Tarawera has been my baby, and now there will be a real baby in my life. And so my life will definitely change as well. I hope that I can still contribute an amount of passion to the Tarawera Ultra Marathon. I may not be able to contribute all of it because I just simply won't have enough passionate bandwidth to go around everything, basically. But I think it's probably going to help prioritize my life, and that I think I'll be a lot less stressed about the event. and a lot less upset when things go wrong, because I think having a baby will put everything in perspective, and I'll be more than happily engaged changing nappies and doing whatever you do around babies. I think it'll be a really good change of perspective in life, basically.
Fantastic.
It's so fantastic.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah. Do you think Tim will he take more? I mean, he's a grandfather, isn't he? He's got a young family and he's a grandfather. Do you think he will sort of step up and take more of a public face? Have you guys talked about that or?
No, I haven't talked about it as much in the past few weeks. So we're right now it's early July and we're both having a little bit of a rest period, not planning things too much, not thinking about stuff. We're just keeping things ticking over in the back of our minds, and it'll be probably August when we really start sitting down and planning things in earnest. But I can definitely see Tim taking a little bit more public role in the event, and then maybe someone might move into a little bit of Tim's shoes in terms of operational and safety management for the event as well.
Fantastic. I think, I mean, it seems clear that whatever happens, you've certainly laid the groundwork, and that sort of that transparency, that authenticity, to use a buzzword, it really, really shines through. So we wanted to kind of wrap that up there, and we have a question that we ask, that we're going to be asking everyone who comes on the show, and that is, hey, Paul Charteris, what's your greatest run ever?
Oh, it's undoubtedly my crack at Western States. That was easily the best executed run I have ever done, and I don't think I was in probably the best absolute shape of my life, but boy, I absolutely nailed that run 100% until it all went 100% wrong. So I started very much near the back of the field, right at the start, and walked up, and in the high country, I just jogged extremely lightly through the terrain, and I was right near the back of the field for quite a long way. But then after about 20-30 miles, I just kept on jogging, and I noticed people were starting to come back towards me. Then in the middle of the race, I just kept on running, and I had a huge amount of energy, and I was very, very acclimated to the conditions and extremely calm, and I was absolutely moving through the field at that stage. I remember passing Dean Canassis at Michigan Bluff.
That's a name drop moment. That's superb, Paul.
What's he up to now?
Who even is that guy now, you know? Left him in your dust.
What's he doing these days? But then it all unraveled pretty quickly, because what I didn't know is that I'd torn a ligament in my hamstring at around about exactly mile 50 of the race, and my leg just started tightening up. I thought it was just sort of natural tightness from having been running for 12 or 13, 14 hours continuously. I tried to get it massaged out, and in fact, getting back to Gordy Ainsley, who was the founder of Western States, so Gordy had already DNF'd the race, and he was at Forest Hill, and Gordy put me on the table, and Gordy's a chiropractor, so he cracked my back and whacked a few things in place and sent me on my way. And I limped into the darkness, and my pacer and I went right through the night and into the following morning at sunrise, and I had to DNF about 20 miles from the finish line. Because all the time, because I didn't have a diagnosis, I thought that all I had was muscle tightness, and because that was what it felt like. But it was a genuine tear. It was about the size of a 10-cent coin in a ligament in my hamstring. There was nothing I could do. Everything had contracted, and I'd lost complete mobility in my leg. So, man, that would have been a great run had that not happened. It would have been an absolute blinder, but I had fun up until then.
That still sounds like a great run, to be able to say that you passed Dean Karnassus and you got cracked, your spine got cracked by Gordy Ainsley, you know, notwithstanding those 20-odd miles. I think it sounds like a great run.
It was. It was a really great run. And it's one of the most memorable moments of my life was sitting on the edge of the Western States Trail, and it's early morning, probably about before 6 o'clock in the morning. I'm all alone. I'm on the side of the trail, and the sun is coming up, and the birds are just waking up in the trees, and the birds are starting to sing. And the very, very tail enders of the Western States Runner walking by me. It's kind of the march of the Walking Dead at the time. And I was just sitting there waiting for the medical crew to come down the hill with a stretcher and take me off the course. It was a rather serene and weird experience to still be in the race at that time, just seeing it all unfold and seeing this beautiful morning unfold in front of me. And then they stretchered me off the course, and when I got back to the road, someone had a pair of scissors and they snipped my wrist bracelet, and they said, "That's the end of your Western States." And then the waterworks started. But it was one hell of an experience, that's for sure. It's what ultra running's all about.
Sure is. Hey, thank you so much for sharing that with us. That's a great story.
Yeah, that's amazing.
And it's a wonderful interview. Thank you very much. We really appreciate it.
That's all good. And I just wanted to wish Matt and Eugene, wish you all the best with Dirt Church Radio. I think I love the podcast format, and I look forward to hearing many, many more amazing interviews and insights on your podcast.
Okay, there we go. Our first one out the gate, onto the tracks. And
just running hard for the hills.
Yeah, through the finish line and into the car. That's Mr. Paul Charteris. That was fantastic. The thing I really love about Paul is his encyclopedic historical knowledge of not only trail running, but Kōrero in general.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Him talking about the growth of Kōrero and then the demise as the mills closed.
Mm,
yeah. Your dad worked there.
He did. I wanted to say that during the interview, but but I stumbled over myself. My father worked at the Kōrero mill as well. In the sort of mid-2000s, he was the maintenance planner for when the big tank there got refurbished.
Wow.
So he spent quite a lot of time there. Yeah.
So that was really interesting to hear that sort of cultural history, as much as also some of that fascinating trail running history and lore. And I think he definitely name dropped talking about overtaking Dean Karnesses.
Yeah. But I guess that's the thing, isn't it? It seems very, I mean, this is such an, and we use the words inclusive, it is such, it's a big little community, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. It is. Yeah. So thank you very, very much for tuning in. We're going to be back next week with another very interesting conversation.
Yeah, we've got a great guest lined up. Yeah,
really great guest.
They're fantastic. So that's an interesting conversation with an interesting runner.
Certainly is. In the meantime, you can find us on social media at Dirt Church Radio, or you can flick us an email, dirtchurchradio@gmail.com. You can find us on the Apple Podcasts app. Or used to be called iTunes, but I think they've rebranded themselves, Apple Podcasts. There you go, point noted. We're also on Stitcher and hopefully soon on SoundCloud. So you can subscribe and rate us on those apps and just spread the word.
Spread the love. I mean, it would be great. We want many people to hear this as possible. So, you know, if you like what you're hearing, tell people about it. That'd be fantastic.
Yeah. And don't forget to write in to tell us your greatest run ever, or go on social media, hashtag greatest run ever and hashtag Dirt Church Radio. We'll find it.
And we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. We've also got a column each week in the stuff.co.nz website. And you'll be able to find that in the lifestyle section of the site. There was a photo last week of us in short shorts, I think.
It was, yeah. It's like... playing drums at assembly in fifth form. There we are in short shorts on the internet on stuff.co.nz. So
we'll go to any length to try and get Dirt Church Radio
traumatizing out there. Your eyeballs and your ears. Dirt Church Radio.
So we've got some people to thank before we wind up. The Dirt Church Radio, they are the Dirt Church Radio crew, aren't they? But the Dirt Church crew we run with each and every week. We've ripped off their photos for our site.
Yeah.
Totally. Stuff photographer Chris McKean. He came and did some photos, including those ones of us in
short shorts. Yeah.
Anyway, that's a thing. Kunal Kumar came running with us at Riverhead and took some beautiful photos, which you also see on the website.
Yep.
And our new logo.
Yeah, it's Sarah Douglas who did the graphic design for the site and our logo. That's fantastic. So thank you, Sarah.
So a huge thanks to our sponsor for the show.
Ultra Running.
We love them.
We do love them.
Even though they've got aliens in them.
Yeah, turns alien out. Technology.
I never knew that.
Yeah, they're terrible.
Yeah.
But we love them.
We love them. There's a link on our website. So thank you very much.
And we'll see you soon.
Thanks, Rigby.